Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 18 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Alex Robinson of the Star Wars Minute. Welcome back, Alex.
Hello, happy to be here.
I hope you are. I mean, after that bickering couple that we've been dealing with for the last 2 days, maybe we'll finally get into something that will... you know, show you what Die Hard really is. Who knows?
I was hoping we were going to see those crazy kids work it out this minute. It's not. You're telling me that's not going to happen?
Not yet. I mean, come on, we're only on at minute 18. You got to wait until... Yeah. I mean, this is a 132-minute movie. You got to wait until
that's true.
At least the late 120s to get there.
Yeah.
If you want, you can come back for that. I can mark you down and have you come back for that. So you'll be up to... So you'll be a completionist. You'll at least know what happened to the couple. You won't know everything else of that.
16 through 20, and then minute 27, minute 127, and they'll got the gist of it.
Hey, why not? You know, if you want, I can do the research and tell you exactly what minute to watch, so it won't ruin the goal that you're trying to make of never watching this. You know, but you'll still know what happens to John and Holly.
Okay,
or you can actually, you can actually just watch Die Hard 2, and then you'll see that they're back together, and you'll know. Mm. Okay, something happened. I don't know.
All right.
Maybe not. All right, so minute 18 begins with the Pacific Courier truck turning into the parking area of the Nakatomi Plaza and ends with Theo confidently reporting over his walkie-talkie. So, as we mentioned, the last 2 days we've been dealing with domestic issues, and today we're gonna go a little bit away from there. All right, so we started by seeing this truck. Now we saw this truck last week also. You know, things are a little suspicious about what this truck is. Nobody really knows at this point. And we see the truck make a right turn into the Nakatomi entrance to the parking area of the building, and it's immediately what seems to be cut off by this Mercedes-Benz 260E that, you know, that's it's sort of like going around it and then sort of cuts it off. You know, what did you think when you saw that? Since you don't know what's really happening, did it look like they're together? Did it look like one's trying to cut the other one off?
No, I thought the car was trying to cut the truck off or drive it up the road or something.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Screeching.
You know.
Yeah. I assumed that the car was trying to shove the truck off the road, because they even put in like that kind of screeching tire sound effect to make it sound like it's a kind of exciting action scene with. So I was surprised to discover that does not seem to be the case.
Yeah, but I like the way that they do that to make you think that. You know, because
why? What? Why would they do that?
I guess it's a red herring to make you think that someone is trying to, you know, like who's the bad guy here? Is the bad guy in the truck? Is the bad guy in the car? And I don't know.
No, I understand why the filmmakers would do it. But if you were to ask the driver of that car, why did you suddenly swerve around that truck and make your breaks? Why is the character doing it?
Why is the character really doing it? Or why would
why
the character
the
car- explain?
Why did the character drive in the car? What is his thinking about why I'm behaving this way? He's not thinking, oh, I'm in a movie. I have to provide a red herring for viewers.
Right.
What is he thinking? Why does he do that?
Well, when we saw the truck last week, the car was behind the truck. We saw the car following the truck. So I guess he realized that when he got here, he needs to get around the truck in order for their plan to work. You know, because they don't want the security guard to get too suspicious that there is a truck that's pulled into the parking lot. You know, you don't have enough time for this to happen. That's what I think.
Okay.
That's my explanation.
Did
you buy that?
I just don't know why, because the truck is going down a different ramp.
No, but not at the beginning. At the beginning, they both enter the plaza, I guess, at the same point, and then the truck stays to the right and the car is on the left.
Yeah. But the truck, yeah.
Right. I mean, if the car was behind the truck, so it needed to make a very wide turn to get around the truck in order to be in the left turn, in the left hand lane, so that the truck's in the right hand lane. I think it has to do with timing and precision here. I think that's what it comes down to.
If we have two cars are going down one, two cars are in a single lane, and then that lane is going to split up into two lanes, one of which goes down into the parking garage, one of which goes up to the front lobby. He wouldn't need to get in front of the truck. He just has to go into the left lane. He doesn't have to beat the truck. He doesn't have to get in front of the truck to go a different way. Anyway.
Right. I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, maybe the stunt driver likes to do fun things like that. You know, we'll find out that the driver is Theo. Maybe, you know, Theo has a little bit of aggression towards Heinrich, who's driving, you know, the truck. Right. I don't know. I mean, there could be so many different explanations. I personally believe it has to do with precision timing, that they need to have the Mercedes-Benz get to the entrance of Nakatomi as fast as possible before any suspicions, you know, arise. That's what I think.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
I'm going to say that they were driving and Theo totally forgot that he's not going under the parking garage. He's going to the front lobby or whoever's driving. I don't know if it's Theo driving or not, but
I would go even further. I would say that I think Theo just forgot that he's supposed to turn. And he's like, oh crap. Oh crap. Right, I missed the turn. I mean.
Yeah.
And then he makes the wide turn and almost cuts Heinrich off. You know, that.
So that explanation is almost the complete opposite of saying, oh, it's a precision thing. It's saying they're totally sloppy.
It could be either. So, but you know, you don't know this, but I know this, that the everything is timed perfectly by these bad guys. So, you know, you know, maybe Theo is just the joker in you know, he's the wild card here. And
he does seem like he's very he's the loose.
Well, he's very different than everyone else, that's for sure. You know, he's the geek.
Yeah.
He's the sadistic geek. But we'll get there. We'll get there later this minute even. You know, so then the truck stays on the right hand side and the car, you know, stays on the left hand side and the truck. I like the shot where you see the two cars parallel to one another, and then you see, you know, the truck begin to descend. You know, it's like those old, you know, comedy routines of Buster Keaton or something, you know, where he's, you know, pretending to go down a flight of stairs. You know, he's behind something. He's walking down stairs and stuff like that. So
you think it's a visual fake out.
I like the way that they do that. And then they should give us another shot of the truck entering a very narrow area. You know, basically this parking lot was not made for trucks. You know, there isn't that much wiggle room on either side for the truck, but they still make it down into the parking garage. And then from there, we get a shot of the guard at the front desk again. You know, he's looking at the monitor and he actually sees the truck enter the parking garage. Now, I mentioned this both times, that, you know, in two different weeks where we saw this security guard. He reminds me of John Larroquette. He's not. It's not him. But he just looks so much like him for some reason.
I could see that.
So I keep referring to him as the John Larroquette doppelganger. You know, I guess it's the 80s haircut, you know.
Yeah, the 80s.
You know, Dan Fielding.
Kind of bouffantish. Yeah.
You know, who knows?
I like it.
Right. And, I mean, first of all, what I really like is that, you know, the shot is from behind the guard, and we see him looking at the monitor. We see the monitor. We see how the surveillance of this building works. You know, I guess you can say it's done well. The surveillance is done well, even though he doesn't know what he's up against, but still, you know, cause we see in the foreground, the Mercedes-Benz pull up, you know, towards the front door at the same time. So the shot is done really well. We see, you know, we can see the guard, we can see the monitor where he sees the truck pull in. You know, he doesn't seem very concerned that a truck has just pulled in, just like he doesn't seem concerned that a Mercedes-Benz has pulled up and is parked right in front of the building. I mean, you have this party going on where, let's say, there's 40, 50 people in the party. Nobody there are no cars parked outside of the building. You know, everyone's in the parking lot. So, like, you know, if I was a security guard, I would get a little suspicious that, you know, a car is parking and both occupants of the car are getting out. You know, are they coming to ask for directions? You know.
Yeah, this is something where I feel like the 30 years of history now has made it so this scene seems like completely kind of like now the security has been elevated so much, especially around big office buildings and things like that. Like it's kind of almost like quaint at how little security they have.
Exactly.
Now,
well, again, so, it is Christmas Eve and there's only, you know, 40, 50 people in the building. You know, the building has been emptied out, you know, I guess you can say.
Yeah. But the fact that like a truck could just enter the basement unencumbered and not, not raise suspicion.
Or, now, what did you think was going on at this point when you watched this?
Well, I know at one point some people wind up like seizing the building and trying to steal some stuff inside of it. So I'm guessing these are the bad guys who are going to thwart or that John McClane is going to have to thwart later on.
Right. So. Okay. All right. No, it's for me, it's very interesting to hear your fresh eyes on this, to see what, you know, what things seem a little, you know, especially now that we're done with the family issues.
Now we're getting into more of the diehard now that's, of it all.
Yeah, exactly. Correct. So, you know, I'm curious to see what you think about these things. So I might ask you often about this.
Well, the thing with I asked someone once, like, should I see Die Hard? And they were like, they didn't know. Because while it is obviously a very revered movie and such, we've seen so many Die Hard. It was such an influence on action movies that, like, so much has been built upon what was established in this movie that I've never seen Die Hard, but I'm sure I've seen every possible situation that they're going to get in because it's been ripped off so many times. So it's like going back to say, oh, should I listen to Elvis? And you're like, well, yeah, but, like, it's not going to be the same as if you were there when Elvis came out. You're not going to get the same excitement listening to Elvis in 2020 that you would have in 1958 or whatever. You know what I mean?
No, but what you're also saying here is that you wouldn't listen to Elvis because you've heard enough Elvis impersonators.
Well,
you're saying that listening to all the Elvis impersonators ruins the idea of listening to Elvis.
I would say that that's – I would say
okay.
that that's
– All right. No. I just wanted to clarify that that's what you're – That's where you're going with that.
Well, it's just, but it's true for any thing that establishes like a, anything that transforms the culture is going to seem quaint on the opposite side of it, because we're all living in a world that has now been influenced by Die Hard for 30 years. So, it's not going to seem as fresh, you know. You kind of have to watch it. If I watch it, I have to always be telling myself, like, we were the first people who did this. Oh, they were this. This had never been done at this time. You know what I mean? As opposed to just enjoying it on its own level as they,
Anyway. Right. Okay. All right. There is something to that. I understand. Meaning you missed the boat. That's what you're saying. You should have seen it 34 years ago, and you might have enjoyed it a lot more because nothing would have been.
There was nothing to compare it to.
So predictable. Yeah, exactly.
So it's not a flaw of the film. If anything, it speaks to the success of the film that it was such a you know, it transformed everything. So it's not it's a compliment to the film, but it's a victim of its own success in a way. So
yes. For Alex Robbins.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, plenty of other people still enjoy Die Hard.
No fun. No fun. Not trying to insult you.
So when you ask me, like, oh, what do you think is going to happen in this scene? I'm like, well, you know, there's, we've seen so this repeated so many times that, like, you know, they're
right. Okay. But, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Right. And then he, you know, the security guard is actually looking at the screen quite intensely. You know, he's concerned. He's trying to figure out why this truck is. Why a courier truck has shown up at, well, I know what time this is. What time do you think this is?
Well, it's Christmas time, so the sun will have gone down earlier. I'm going to guess 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
On December 24th, 1988, and also 87 and 89, since we never established exactly what year this takes place, the sun set around 4:50. John got to the office around that time. So let's say maybe it's an hour after he got there. So we're talking maybe it's around 6 o'clock. It looks a lot later than that.
Yeah, I was also taking into account the fact that people were like intoxicated enough at their Christmas party that they were ducking into rooms to try to make sweet love, which would make me think it was later in the party rather yes. than at the start of the party.
Well, the party already started when John got there. John shows up at around uh-huh. a quarter to five yeah. because it's like dusk, and the party is going full swing at that point, because if this takes yeah. place in 1988, okay, it's also a Saturday.
Okay.
Which throws everything completely yeah, off. You know, weird. They're having a Christmas party on Christmas Eve that by 5 o'clock people are already
well, that's, so that's weird because if it's a Saturday, like they made people come in specifically to a party as opposed to, hey, let's just have it on Friday night. After we're all here anyway. Let's just end early and have a few drinks. And that's very strange, especially since it's a Japanese company and the Japanese are not especially known for being a Christmas celebrating people. The fact that they would make everyone come in on Saturdays is correct. Very peculiar.
Right. Which therefore that sort of leans towards the fact that this maybe was 87 because then Christmas Eve was Friday night. So if that's okay. the case, then okay, it's the end of the workday. But again, John shows up at the party and immediately a guy comes over and kisses him. And you know, this drunk guy comes over and kisses him. So one of the guys in the party is already drunk at a quarter to five.
Well, I mean that, but it's at least a little bit more because you can assume perhaps maybe that if it's Christmas, that their Japanese overlords would have let them like end the workday earlier and start the Christmas party like at four.
Right.
You know, as opposed to saying, okay, you're still on the clock until 5 o'clock, then you can start the Christmas party. Maybe,
right. That's
know,
true.
All right, it's 2:30. Let's just call it a day and whatever. Or that guy's that's just true. A lush and is drunk all the time at 5 o'clock on Friday.
Could be. You know, that's definitely a possibility. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I find strange is why would the company have their party on Christmas Eve? Don't most companies have their Christmas parties before Christmas Eve? Because Christmas Eve is a time when people want to actually be home with their families.
I would assume that to be the case. But again, Japanese businessman overlords, maybe they're like, well, we're not going to let you take off Christmas Eve day, but we'll at least let you have a party on that day because you don't get to be okay. the world's number one economy by taking Friday off.
Right. Okay. So, that's true.
Anyway, who knows?
Makes sense.
But that's possibly one
of for sure. Right. Then, so at this point, the Mercedes-Benz comes to a stop in front of the building and it basically screeches to a halt. Again, Theo is a very erratic driver. That's what it comes down to. You know, he comes to a halt. You know, he basically pulls the handbrake up really quickly, and then you know the doors fly open, and two people get out of the car. You know,
yeah.
really quick. Like it's very fast paced the whole thing, and then the guard looks up, and you know we can see he's looking at what's going on, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, at the same time, still trying to look at this strange truck that has stopped in the middle of the parking garage. It's not even parked. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd think that it would, they would have at least tried to park it somewhere, but it's a little more suspicious if you're just leaving the engine idle in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little strange there. And then two people get out of the car. A tall blonde man gets out of the passenger side and a black man gets out from the driver's side. And the two of them are having this very animated conversation, and the guard looks up at them and, you know, sees the two of them are just having this conversation and then just starts looking down at the papers that he's dealing with. And then they, you know, keep the tension rising and just give us another shot of the truck just standing in the loading zone in the parking lot, you know, idly waiting, stuff mm-hmm. like that. We get actually a shot of the side view mirror. And we can see the driver who is actually, gentleman. Yes, another blonde gentleman who this is a character who we will later find out. His name is Heinrich. He is played mm-hmm. by an actor named Gary Roberts, which doesn't seem to really fit with the fact that he's supposed to be this European, you know, it's not a European sounding name. Let's put it that way. But he actually was born in, he's German. He was born in Germany on the 11th of February, 1962. And
Is that the name he was born with?
According to IMDb, that's his name. It doesn't say that he has a different birth name or anything like that. He only has 5 TV credits and 4 movie credits, including this movie. And he plays an Australian cop in Point Break. So Yeah, very small parts. This movie is probably his biggest success, because he does have an integral part besides being the driver of this truck. Later on, we get to see him do some interesting things too. And but I like the shot. I like the way that we see his face via the side view mirror. You know, it leaves things
Definitely adds a
a
sense of
little
mystery.
mysterious and menacing. And you know, they change the music at that time. You know, it sort of like it takes things up a beat. You know, the music is telling us something, that something's about to happen. And then we see Theo come through, and he comes through the revolving door, you know, of the lobby. Now I'm gonna take a little break here. What do you know about revolving doors?
What do I
Yes.
know about them?
What do you think the point of a
Well,
revolving door is?
it's to keep in the air conditioning.
Very close.
That would be my guess.
That's
Air can be for temperature control, I guess, heat or cold, depending on where you are.
great. That's great. So a revolving door is typically consists of three or four doors that hang on a central shaft and rotate around vertical axis within a cylindrical enclosure. Revolving doors are energy efficient, as they act as an airlock, and they prevent draft, which decreases the loss of heating or cooling for the building. They were originally designed
There
in order to relieve the immense pressure caused by air rushing through high-rise buildings. And at the same
you
time,
go.
they were used in order to allow large number of people to pass in and out at the same time. You know, there's less of a, I guess, a bottleneck if you have the revolving door, as opposed to people just trying to get through a regular door.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because in a reg if you in a revolving door, you can have people going in and out fairly smoothly, whereas but if it's a regular old-fashioned door, then it can get more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
Okay.
makes
When
sense.
do you think the idea of a revolving door was first patented?
Well, I'm guessing it would have to be after high rises were invented. I'm gonna say 1929.
1881. 1881 in
1881, someone's
Germany.
ahead of the curve.
A
German
man named
engineering.
H. Bachhacker in Berlin received the patent on December 22nd, 1881, for making a door without draft of air. So,
Oh,
yeah.
okay.
So, yeah. Okay, now,
Guy's got to be a billionaire now.
well, he's probably no longer with us if this was 1881, but I would assume so. There were actually, and I'm not going to go through the entire history, but there were a number of other people who perfected it over the years. You know, so. And I'm talking about even back then, like in 1888, someone already perfected it. And then in 1889, someone else perfected it even more. And then 1899, I mean, this is technology of the late 1800s of how to keep. I don't think it really had to deal with air conditionings back then, but I guess they had to deal with the airflow at the time.
Wind draft.
The wind tunnel effect, I guess you could say. Okay, so we'll get back to the action. Sorry to cut you off on the action there. So
Oops,
Theo comes through the door and starts going, "So, Kareem rebounds, right? Feeds Worthy on the break, over to AC, to Magic, then back to Worthy, right?" And I mean, I love the way that he just delivers this. It's really sounds as if the two of them are having this type of conversation about a basketball game, you know. Are you a basketball fan?
I'm not a basketball fan.
Okay, neither am I. Okay, and I've heard of three out of four of those names, even though I mean obviously I've heard this line hundreds of times, but you know in general I've heard of three out of four of them. So the starting lineup from I think 86 to 89, based on what I read, basically the four of them and the fifth guy was always being rotated. So you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, all
Sure,
right.
famous.
You have AC Green, James Worthy, and Magic Johnson. They were
All
the
right.
four main starters, and they, you know, they won a few championships. Do you know anything about any of these four people? Or, again, I'm not a basketball fan, so I had to look all this up, but.
I mean, obviously, I think Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I'd say, are the two most famous ones, at least to my casual observer ears. Yeah, and I know they were like a dynasty and stuff, and I think there's a TV show about it, or at least there was when we were recording this with John C. Reilly as right. a basketball coach. But,
football, basketball.
I, of course, will know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from his brief but memorable role in the film Airplane. So,
of course, I was going to get
that. That's my Kareem, favorite Kareem.
Yeah. Do you know how tall Kareem is?
He's 7'2".
That's right. Is that right? That's just amazing. Yeah.
There you go.
Wait, isn't that what wasn't Peter Mayhew 7'2"?
Oh, you know, we just went over this on the show, and I don't remember.
I know that. I'm aware of that.
You broke everyone down by height.
I have a feeling. Yeah, you see, now you have something else you can add in the next time we start talking about who's taller in Solo.
Compare
you know,
other tall people. I like that.
Yeah,
I can write that down.
It could be. You now know that you can actually add him in there. Mm-hmm. So okay, James Worthy he was actually 6'9", or he is. All four of these players are still alive and kicking as of recording.
Well, don't jinx it.
In 2022. I don't think me saying something is what's going to change what's going to happen in the world.
Okay.
I'm a firm believer that just because I say something like that, that's not what's going to happen.
All right.
You know, I don't think any of us have the ability to kill someone by just mentioning that they're alive.
Well, very famously on Star Wars Minute, we made a reference to, we were just like talking about a celebrity death, and Pete was like, I don't know, let's say it's like Tom Petty. And then Tom Petty dies, and Tom Petty literally died like the day after we aired that episode. So,
oh,
careful
wow.
out there.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, but maybe Pete has those powers.
Yeah, Pete,
I don't.
Pete, yeah. You've tried and tried. You've not killed a single celebrity yet, but.
Exactly. There you go. So, do you know that James Worthy was also an actor?
No. Oh, did he play a Klingon in Star Trek?
Yes, he did. Okay. Yes, he did. He actually played the tallest Klingon ever because he's 6'9".
Yes.
There's never been another character who plays a Klingon that is taller than James Worthy.
Yeah, he's not yet.
So he's worthy of that. So just so you know, Peter Mayhew was 7'3".
Okay.
According to IMDb.
An
inch taller than Kareem. Mm. Exactly. Then you have A.C. Green,
mm-hmm.
who was the... He actually is the player who has played the most the longest consecutive game streak with 907 straight games played.
It's a lot of games.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And apparently, you know, they ended his streak because they refused to sign him. You know, that's a way to get him to end your streak.
Did they refuse to sign him specifically just to ruin the streak?
I don't know that.
He's kind of petty.
I assume not. I assume it was I think he was just out of his prime at that point because it was already 2001. So yeah. I mean if he was born in 63, so that means he was 38, which I guess is old for a basketball player.
Yeah. And it's not like baseball, even kind of put somebody slow in a position where you don't have to run very much because everyone has to run a basketball. Right. So.
Yeah, basketball you all gotta run. You know, and I mean Kareem played until he was 42.
Yeah.
Which is also pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about that. And then the final member of the team that they mentioned here is Irvin Magic Johnson.
He's still around as of this recording.
As of this recording, we'll have to wait and see what happens with Alex's magic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like I said, good thing Pete's not here. There you go. Now, I mean... Yeah. I never grew up, as I mentioned numerous times, I grew up in Detroit. So, mm-hmm. you know, for me, I was never a fan of the Lakers because, you know, the Pistons and Lakers had a huge rivalry at the end of the 80s. I think it was like 86, 87, 80. Around this time, there was a huge rivalry between them. You know, and I still remember I was in a comic book store buying a comic when Magic Johnson notified the world that he had HIV. Mm-hmm. For some reason, you know, I was flipping through comics and, you know, they had it on the TV screen. You know, that Magic Johnson just, you know, it's not like today where you get alerts on your cell phone and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, here you had to go to the comic book store to get an alert.
A comic book store of all places.
Yeah, seriously.
Or sports news.
Seriously. What? I was shocked at the time. You know, it was in 1991 that he announced it. So, yeah, I guess I was a senior in high school when that happened. So, yeah, that was just...
it's kind of ironic because everyone was very upset and sad, but he's probably outlived several of the other Lakers by this point.
Yeah. Well, the other three are still around also, but yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, it has to do with him and Wilt Chamberlain being, you know, the most popular men on the court, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
They knew how to play the court. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, you know, Theo's in the middle of this very animated discussion about these Lakers, and they walk towards the desk, and the guard doesn't really even flinch while they're coming up. I mean, you'd think if someone comes into your office or the area where you are, and they're being very, very animated and having this discussion, you're going to look up, and he doesn't, you know. And then Carl pulls out a gun with a silencer and shoots the guy right in the head.
Mm-hmm. Dead.
Bye-bye, doppelganger John Larroquette.
Mm. Barely got to know him.
And that's right. You barely got to know him. But, you know, he was maybe he was studying. Maybe, you know, maybe he's like a college student. My master's student studying.
From what I heard, originally John Larroquette was supposed to shoot back and actually shoot before the guy, but they didn't have the budget, they didn't have the time, so this is just the way it came out. But hopefully one day they'll do like a special edition where they can finally correct it and make it look like the way it was always supposed to, really.
Yeah, and I think George Lucas told them that it's not worth making the changes. It costs too much money later on.
Yeah, no one will notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure not. For sure. And, I mean, it's a great shot right between the eyes.
Yeah.
And he flies backwards. And then Theo has a great line. Boom! 2 points.
Yeah.
Which is really insensitive.
Do you think they planned this out ahead of time?
Did who plan this out? The scriptwriters or Theo and...
Theo and Heinrich or whatever
and
his
Carl.
Name was.
No, he's Carl. This is Carl.
Did Carl. He just... Was he like... Okay, listen, I'm going to tell the story. And when I set up the shot about the basketball game, that's when you blast him between the eyes. And that's when I can land with the 2-point line. Or was Carl just kind of like, I'm just going to go in and shoot him. And then Theo took this upon himself to sort of do this improvised little.
You ask a great question that I do not have the answer for. I assume that they planned something between this. They said, we're going to go there. We're going to distract him because we're going to have this I'm going to have this animated conversation because Carl doesn't say a word. You know, it's Theo who's just talking right. The whole time because, you know, who knows how good Carl's English is at this point. And, you know, the idea was, okay, I'm going to distract him and then you're going to shoot him. I think that's what it comes down to. And I think his boom 2 points, that was, you know, his ad lib. That was Theo's ad lib.
So that was just a natural result. That was just good timing that he happened to say that right when.
I don't think.
Or he knew he was going to be shooting him. So maybe.
Well, you think he was like planning it beforehand? He's like, okay, what am I going to say? Carl's going to shoot him. What do I say? What do I say so that Carl will hear? Because Carl's the only one who's going to hear him say 2 points, you know, boom, 2 points.
Right.
And the other security guard who we'll get to tomorrow. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because the guy will theoretically be dead.
Yes.
Carl doesn't care. So I guess Theo's just doing it for his own amusement.
Well, he laughs. So, you know.
Yeah.
We know he's somewhat, you know, sadistic by the way that he does this. So I don't know. I mean, they do it really well because the cover story of them, the two of them talking about the, you know, the Lakers and stuff, it comes across realistically. You know, that the two guys could be having this type of conversation in order to distract the guard. You know, it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Carl doesn't even bat an eye also. He's very cold and sadistic also here by pulling out, you know, the gun. And, I mean, Theo also leans on the counter as he's doing this.
I don't know if I would characterize Carl as sadistic. He seems efficient. He's not making the guy suffer.
Right. Anymore. Okay. He's
just very cold and
efficient. Okay.
And, you know, precise. Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. You know, and, you know, especially given.
I don't want you to mischaracterize villains and give them the wrong medical diagnosis.
Of course not.
Yeah.
So. Right. I mean, especially given the fact that you know, we find out later that Theo is basically the tech guy. You know, he's the local tech guy.
Yeah.
But he's also enjoying this. You know, enjoying it a little too much for what a tech guy usually does in these type of movies.
He seems more sadistic than Carl.
That's true. And then, you know, as Doppelganger John Larroquette falls backwards, you know, we can still see the truck on the monitor, you know, being viewed.
Yeah.
So again, it's a great shot that we can still see all that going on there. And then Theo, very dexterously, you know, jumps up through the little, you know, I don't even know, you wouldn't call it a window, but the area on the desk, you know, that's open because you have like these big granite sides, you know, there's the part where where the guard looks through, I guess, to greet people. He lifts himself up really quickly and then kicks the guard, you know, kicks him really hard in order for him to fall backwards even further, you know, in order to fall onto the ground.
Yes, get away from the desk.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he jumps on the ground, pulls out a walkie-talkie from his jacket, and says, "We're in." And you can see that Theo has this huge ring on his finger, which makes
that.
It seem as if maybe he's like, you know, an Ivy League, you know, graduate or something like that. I couldn't make out the emblem on the ring. We get to see it in Tomorrow's Minute also. Hmm. I couldn't figure out what the emblem was. And as much as I tried to find a clearer picture on the internet, when I put up Die Hard ring, I was able to get like this fantasy football ring that a group of fantasy footballers gave out to the winner that year. And that was the diehard winner or something like that. So
nothing about Theo's particular ring.
And that's pretty much all we have to say about this minute. Do you have anything else you wanted to mention about this?
Well, I looked into the Theo, the actor who plays him, Carl Gilliard Jr.
Clarence Gilliard Jr.
Yes, I didn't really recognize any of his other projects. He seems to have done a lot of these Christian media things that are popular. He was in like two of the Left Behind movies, and he's been in several different, you know, these Christian movies that come out now. So that seems to be his. I don't know whether that means he's a Christian or whether he just, you know, got typecast or what, but. Interesting to go for.
Well, you missed one of his other big roles.
Oh, what was it?
He was in Top Gun.
Oh.
He played one of the pilots. He played Sundown.
Never seen Top Gun?
What? You've never seen Top Gun either?
No, that's the third most interesting thing about me. So
apparently.
Yeah,
apparently.
And I was also on Top Gun Minute. So, I just did 1 minute on Top Gun Minute. So.
Oh, okay. So that and apparently Sundown wasn't in that minute.
It was not. No, it was just Goose and Maverick and Iceman. Is that a guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he was in Top Gun and Die Hard. He was in two big '80s movies.
Yeah.
That's right. Gilliard. Yeah.
That's right. And he was also on Chips.
Oh.
He was a recurring character for 20 episodes named Officer Benjamin Webster.
Wow, Ben Webb.
Yeah. I also read somewhere that he stopped being an actor, and he actually became a college professor.
Oh, just like Theo with his ring.
Apparently. Well, no, Theo's ring just says that he graduated, meaning that he has the ability.
What did he teach?
I don't know. Terrorist.
How to override security systems in office tower.
Yeah, I don't know. Not really sure.
All right, let's look into it. If anyone listening has taken his class, wants to let us know. Chime in the comments.
he was also on Matlock. He was in 85 episodes of Matlock.
He was like a semi-recurring then. Or did he play different characters every time?
Yeah, but this is all... No, same character. He played Conrad McMasters. I never really watched Matlock, so I couldn't tell you what he did there. You know, he doesn't have much of a career after that.
Well, 85 episodes of Matlock is pretty good.
Right. No, but I'm saying he was big in the 80s, and that was it. You know.
Yeah.
I'll have to look up about his professorship. Yeah. Here he's an associate professor of theater at the University of Nevada.
Go Coyotes.
So yeah, interesting. I don't know if he's still there now, but he was, you know, that at some point he was right in that role.
Yeah.
All right. There isn't much dialogue in this minute anyway, but the script has nice descriptions about things. So it shows the building lobby. The guard at the front desk notices the Emery truck. In the script, it's an Emery truck, not a Pacific Courier truck, on his monitor. The guard continues to watch the truck and only half notices as a Mercedes pulls up in front of the building and two extremely well-dressed businessmen in their late 20s climb out and start up the stairs for the door. As they cross the lobby to the guard's table to sign in, we hear their conversation. Man number one, Theo, animatedly. So, Kareem rebounds. Listen, this is a great play. Feeds Worthy on the break, over to AC, to Magic, back to Worthy in the lane, and suddenly the other man pulls out a Walther pistol with a silencer and aims it at the guard's forehead. Before the guard can react, he pulls the trigger. Theo, dryly, boom, 2 points. The speed with which the murder takes place sets the tone for the rest of the action. The killer moves behind the desk, stepping over a small pool of blood from the guard. His name is Carl. And actually, in the script, there's a misprint. It says his name is Kyle. Big with long blonde hair, like a rock drummer, Carl takes off the silencer and looks at the video monitor of the truck. The first man, Theo, opens his briefcase, takes out a portable CB radio, and speaks into it. We're in. So the reason I say it's a typo is because on the first line it says Kyle, and the next line it says Carl. So, you know, that's back when they didn't have
word processors. I think it's interesting that they specified that Carl was blonde and looked like a rock drummer.
Yeah. And Alexander Gudinov said, oh, I got to dress like that. Every Wednesday, we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where our guest gives their top five performances of Alan Rickman. So what have you got for us?
Well, coming in at number five.
I've only seen two movies with
Alan Rickman. No, this one I can say I managed to come up with five entries, none of which are Harry Potter.
Okay. I thought you were going to say in Harry Potter 2, Harry Potter 3, Harry Potter 6.
I'm not crazy about the Harry Potter movies. I like the books, but it wasn't crazy about the movies.
I loved the books, and because I love the books, I cannot stand the
movies. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Because I feel the opposite about Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, I hated the book. I found it to be, I find Tolkien doesn't know how to write. He tells a great story, but he's just really boring with the way that he writes it. And the movie is able to take the story and make it more interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. I read The Hobbit and I loved it. I've never been able to crack The Lord of the Rings as much as I loved the movie. So,
same here.
Yeah, weird.
If I ever need to fall asleep, I can read Lord of the Rings.
So yeah, weirdly, I loved The Hobbit book. Could not read the Lord of the Rings book, loved the Lord of the Rings movies, hated the Hobbit movies. So
I'm the same way. I can't stand the Hobbit movies.
Yes, but getting on to Hans Gruber.
Yes,
Five, I have the Kevin Smith movie Dogma, in which he played a angel, I think. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've seen it. I feel like this was Kevin Smith was really trying. This was like an ambitious thing in his part, so I give him credit for that. Marvin the Paranoid Android in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He did a voice of a robot in that movie, and in the Star Wars Rebels cartoons, I think it was, they did almost like a parody. They did almost like a tribute to Marvin the Paranoid Android. Coming in number three, Bottle Shock, which I think also stars Captain Kirk, Christopher Pine, as a wine, it's supposedly based on a true story about how the California wine industry came into being.
I've never heard of that one. I'll have to check that out.
Sense and Sensibility, which also had Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson.
Hugh Grant.
And Emma Hugh Grant, Thompson. Right, yeah. So, and then finally, of course, Galaxy Quest, the homage to classic Star Trek, in which he plays the, I guess he always plays kind of a snarky, sarcastic kind of person. Very dour. So there you go. Alan Rickman, gone but not forgotten. It's a shame he never got to be in a Star Wars.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Alex. Why don't you tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Well, in addition to being a co-hosting the Star Wars Minute and the Godfather Minute, I am also an artist. If you go to alexrobinson.fun, there you can find a link to my merch store, where you can get all sorts of fun designs and pop cultural mashups on t-shirts or prints or mugs or phone cases, et cetera, et cetera. So alexrobinson.fun. There you can find also links to my podcast. So it's one-stop shopping for everything you need to know about Alex Robinson and his fun.
All right, cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can go to my website. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.